So just in case you aren't clear, we're here for water. Everyone's second favorite liquid, basic water comprehension for homebrewers. We're going to comprehend so much today. By the way, I'm Shauna Cormier. I am the secretary of AHA's governing committee. And so I have a personal connection with this man. He was the one who inspired me to homebrew. So he's taught me everything I know, which isn't as much as he knows at all. It's hard. It's like approaching the sun. So you've been homebrewing since 1992, right? So that's a long time. And he owns, a co-owner of Bitter Nesters in New York City. So go New York, yes. So what's most inspiring about him is he's such a good teacher. And he makes it accessible to everybody. So he never makes you feel dumb if you don't know this or whatever. He's just a great teacher, great inspiration to all homebrewers. So without further ado, here's John LaPoya.
Brooklyn in the house. How are you today? Yeah.
Hi, everybody. My name is John LaPoya. Thank you very much for coming this morning to talk on water. Everyone's second favorite liquid. Does anyone know what the first favorite liquid is? Beer. All right. You got the joke. I'm really happy. You guys having a good time at HomebrewCon today or yesterday or everything? It's a great party, right? Every year it gets better. I absolutely love it. I want to make sure that you're all staying hydrated. You're drinking a lot of water? Get it? Water? Yeah? All right, good. I'd like to, before I get started, I do own Bitter Nesters homebrew shop in Brooklyn. I'm co-owner. As a co-owner, that means that there's another owner. And I would just like to briefly introduce him. He's sitting right there. He hates me for doing this. That's Douglas Amport. He doesn't get enough props. I'd like to thank also the American Homebrewers Association, not just for throwing on this awesome party that we do in conference, but also for everything they do for the homebrewing community and for my shop in particular. They've been really, really helpful. So I want to thank them. I especially want to thank Gary Glass, Matt Bowling, Christy Switzer, who's been amazing to us, and John Palmer, who's actually a friend and a mentor to me. So I just want to thank them. But mostly I want to thank you guys. All of the homebrewers in the world, I want to thank every single one of them for keeping this our thing alive, our hobby alive, and for actually supporting your local homebrew shop. This means the world to us. No matter where you are, buying local is super important because without you, we don't exist. And so I just want to thank all of you for doing that. That's a big deal to us. All right. First of all, how many homebrewers here? Oh, my God, I had no idea. How many extract brewers? Oh, great. I won't talk about extract at all. There we go. There he is. How many all-grain brewers? There we go. Everyone up. All right. And how many people adjust their water now? How many water adjusters? So we do have, well, most of you. What are you doing here? Well, this is going to be a basic water comprehension, right? So you might, hopefully you'll get something out of it. Because water for brewing is a deep subject. And this is really, I'm just going to hit the tip of the iceberg. This is a watered-down version of a class that I teach at the store. And I'm going to try not to make this too dry. That's the end of the puns, all right? You got to get them out of the way. So now, for more comprehensive information, I'm sure you all know this, but if you're looking for more information, I definitely suggest John Palmer's book, How to Brew. The new version has really comprehensive water. He breaks it down. He gives you a lot of the math and the chemistry, but he makes it pretty easy to understand. And on top of that, Martin Brueengard's site, Brewing Water, I'm sure you've all been on there. He has a really good water knowledge page, and there is also... he has a really good calculator. So does John. John has a good calculator, too. So I'm not going to talk too much about math or chemistry. You're welcome. I'm really just going to go over the information that you can then go and find out more about. What I'm trying to demystify water a little bit and also just make it a little bit more approachable if you have never treated your brewing liquor or your mash for water or your wort. So just recently I was in South America. I was in Argentina, and I was visiting a lot of the new breweries that are there, the Cervecería Artesanal. And there's a lot of them. They're all very good. And we were at one where I was having a pale ale and my girlfriend was having a stout. And she turned to me and she goes, "This stout's good. Like, it's fermented well. It's the grain bill's good. It's a stout." She goes, "But there's something dull about it. I'm not sure what it is." And she had me try it. I tried it. And without asking her, I took a pinch of table salt and threw it in her beer. And she's like, "What? What'd you do that for?" I said, "Try it." And the beer was much better with that little bit of table salt. The malt was more round. The beer just had a complexity. It was just a better beer overall. And it's because of the chloride and the sodium chloride brought those malt flavors out. Now, it's something you can try at home if you've never tried it, especially with dark beers, just a pinch of salt. You don't want to use too much because sodium tastes like salt. So when you're salting something, you don't want to overdo it with food because beer is basically food. Then on the other hand, so that was an under-salted beer, and I think it's because they use glacier water. I was in Patagonia at the time, and I think it's just low mineral, and I think they never really did anything to put minerals in their water. What do I know? But on the other hand, it was at one of these homebrew events that I go to all the time, and I don't know if the brewer is here or not, but a brewer gave me Northeast IPA. Anyone ever have one of those? It's a fairly unknown style. And he gives me the beer, and I take a sip of it, and I'm like, yeah, this tastes like Gatorade. And the reason was he was trying to hit 100 parts per million calcium, but he wasn't thinking about the sulfate and chloride that he was adding at the same time. And he over-salted, which is something you can do. It's just like if you, with your food, you know, salt's great. So if, you know, 1 teaspoon is good, then 4 pounds should be better. It doesn't work that way. So we have both sides of that coin. We have undersalting, which would might be a little dull, and oversalting. So I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. So just keep that in mind, that sometimes less is more. When we're treating water, it's something that we want to get a nice balance with. I don't have a clicker, so I'm going to reach over. So what water is best for brewing? Well, I recently offered a friend of mine a glass of water, and he said, "What's that?" And I said, "That's what beer is made out of." So as you know, 90% of your beer can be water, so the quality of water is very important. So if you're starting out, you want to start out with clean, potable water. Is that the right side? Yeah. A little bit of minerals is fine, but it's got to be something that you can drink and not die from drinking. Like, it's just, that's the first step. Because people will say to me, "Hey, can I make beer out of pond water?" And I've heard this. It's like, yeah, but you're going to have to treat it. You're going to really have to treat it so it's something potable, and I don't think that you should do that. Like, if you're having a problem with the potability of your water, the quality of your beer is the last thing you have to worry about. You really should make sure that you have good quality water coming down the pipe. So make sure that is it. One of the problems that you can have is if you have very hard water and it has to be run through a softener. Now, I find that people don't always know what hard or soft water is, so I'm going to explain it real quick. I'm sure some of you know. But what hard water is if you take a handful of the water and you throw it at someone, it'll hurt them a lot more than soft water, which is going to just kind of bounce off them, which is a complete lie. That is not what hard and soft water is. Hard water is just high in mineral, mainly calcium and magnesium. So it's high mineral water, and the reason why it's called hard, if you didn't know this, is from the laundry industry. It means it's hard to suds. Soft water means it's soft to suds. It doesn't make sense, right? It should be hard and easy. It should be easy water. So if you have hard water, you have a lot of minerals, it's usually from where you're getting your water source from. If it's from an aquifer, it's going to be under the ground for a long time, sucking up minerals. If it's from a reservoir like we have in New York, it's going to be soft because it's basically treated rainwater. In New York, we have very soft water, nice lathery showers. It's good. But if you have hard water, you generally will have a water softener so that you can suds. And they soften the water by adding sodium. It's a deionization process, and they add sodium. And you have soft water, but if you've ever taken a shower in softened water, it's kind of slimy. It doesn't ever really get as sudsy as I like it. And it wouldn't be great for brewing. I have friends who own a brewery in California. They have extremely hard water. And one thing about California, you never know where the water is coming from, but it's mainly high calcium, high bicarbonate. And so they soften the water first, and then they have to run it through an RO filter before they can use it. And a reverse osmosis filter. They need to clean it, and then they add salt afterwards. So if you're dealing with softened water, you do want to actually somehow filter it first before using it, or just use a different water source. You can actually use just spring water or something like that. All right. Should I treat my water? Well, remember, adjusting your water minerals and your pH, it's an enhancement. It's not a cure. If you're making bad beer, if your beer is coming out bad, you might want to look at everything else in the process before you look at the water. The first step is to really make good beer. And how do we make good beer? Well, the steps really are proper sanitation, right? If you want to make a beer that you have a single culture, even a mixed culture, you want to make sure that those are the cultures that you're using. So having a sanitized environment during fermentation, super important. People ask me a lot, well, how'd they make beer in the Middle Ages then, when they didn't have sanitation? I was like, well, the beer was probably as good as the surgery. So that's how I, why do we want to live in the Middle Ages? I like having an iPhone. Good yeast health, as Gabriella talks about. Proper yeast count, those are very important. Fermentation temperature, they're really the highest priorities. The next one would be your recipe, right? Making sure you have a good balance of hops to malt. All these things are way more important than your water. If you're using good quality water, that is. I mean, if you're using the pond water, that might be the problem. But if you're using good quality water and your beer is not coming out good, you might want to look into why there. And then if all that is good, then water adjustments can definitely help. Remember that the ingredients are synergistic. Water adjustments can make good beer great. That's a real whole idea about it. And it's like seasoning with food. Again, I'm going to mention food a couple of times because I like food. So the reason why we treat our water is threefold. The first one, and a very important one, is to remove chlorine and chloramine. These are disinfectants that are in our water that keep us from dying, which is a great invention. The second is to adjust the mash pH for better enzymatic activity, which can increase sugar yield by adjusting water hardness versus alkalinity. So adjusting your mash pH can increase your yield, increase your efficiency, and it can also change your flavors because lower pH will be a little bit more of a bite, higher pH will be a little bit rounder. So this is also not just for yield but also for flavor. So that's the second reason. And then the third is to enhance hop or malt flavors using mineral salts. Just again, like seasoning food. This also will enhance mouthfeel, and it can be very good for yeast health. So adjusting your brewing water is not a bad idea. It's something you can definitely do, but you definitely need some more information. It's along that chemistry line. And luckily, there are calculators out there. I'm not going to give you any math today. Just so you know, I mentioned that before, but I will mention it again. You're not getting any math. Excuse me one second. I need a glass of water. Excuse me. All right. So the first step is you want to make sure you remove the disinfectants from your water, chlorine and chloramine. This is actually important, especially if you're topping off water for that extract brewer over there. Because with extract brewing, we do a partial boil and we top off at the end. If you have high chlorinated water and you top off with it, the chlorine will react with polyphenols that are in your wort and they'll create chlorophenols, which is that what they call the Band-Aid flavor. I never quite understood that because I never ate a Band-Aid. But to me, it's an antiseptic flavor. It's not a hard thing to do, and it's not a bad idea to dechlorinate or dechloramine your water even if you are doing a mash, even if you are heating it, which would effectively clean it out anyway. But I like to start with dechlorinated water no matter what. So luckily, in New York, we have chlorine. They don't use chloramine in New York. Chlorine is volatile. You can actually smell it, and it gases off pretty easy. So if you just have chlorine, and you would have to find out from your water municipality what kind of disinfectant they use. But if you have chlorine, then all you need to do is fill up a pot with all your brewing liquor and let it sit for a couple of hours. It will gas off pretty quick. So that's a super easy way of getting rid of chlorine. In New York, and I guess in any other municipality, during the summer they tend to over-chlorinate because of algae blooms and other blooms that happen in the water. Because it's so warm, they add a lot of chlorine. So you can smell it. It smells like a swimming pool sometimes coming out. Now, if your municipality uses chloramine, it's harder to remove. It works better. It's actually less volatile. That's why a lot of places use it. And the best way to get rid of it is probably a carbon filter or, again, a reverse osmosis filter. If you do reverse osmosis, you do have to build your water up again. You never want to brew with just RO water. Or you can treat your water, and I'm sure you know this, with some Campton. Sodium or potassium metabisulfite will completely dissipate the chlorine or chloramine very quick. One cabinet tablet will treat up to 20 gallons of water. So I usually use about 10 gallons of liquor at the most for my 5-gallon batch. So I use a pinch. We have the potassium metabisulfite as just a powder. I pinch it in there, and you can smell the chlorine and chloramine just kind of gas off. So it's not every time I make beer, I make sure I just do that. It's an easy thing to do, and I know that that's one part of water treatment that I can take care of. Again, especially if I was going to top off. John Palmer told me to mention this to you. Chlorine is not chloride. Keep that in mind. Campton actually converts the chlorine to chloride, so don't get the two confused. He was kind enough to look over this talk, and he was like, that's the one thing I want you to let him know. So there you go, John. All right, so we got one down. We dechlorinated our water. You're all water treaters now. Good for you. So do I need to adjust my mash pH? Well, that's a good question. Do I really need to do this? Well, you know, if you're happy with the efficiency of your mash, if you're getting the amount of sugar out, then you probably don't need to worry about it. And that sounds like a funny thing to say, but most people should adjust their mash pH. But if you're happy and you're making good beer, you probably could just add salt to the boil just to enhance. You don't necessarily need to do it. If you find you're having efficiency problems, you might want to look into other reasons why you're having that before, again, you look at the water. Remember, water's, like, important, but it's down there as far as adjustments. Most of the time, efficiency problems come from your lauter, your sparge, and your crush, depending on how well you're crushed. The brew in a bag sometimes has a low efficiency, mainly because of the higher water-to-grain ratio, but some people get great efficiency without sparging. It's fine. So it's always a good idea, though, to take a mash pH reading to see where the pH of your mash is. It's not a bad idea. Most beers can benefit from some mash pH adjustment. And remember, adjusting the pH is also a flavor adjustment, so it's not, I'm not saying not to do it, but if you're like, hey, you know, I'm making great beer, yay, keep buying ingredients. I'm all about it. That's good. All right, so now we're going to talk a little bit about what pH is and how it works in the mash. And, again, this is one of the adjustments that we can make. So you should remember this from high school, as pH is the logarithmic measurement of the acidity or alkalinity of a solution. pH 7 is neutral. Above pH 7 is alkaline, up to 14. And below pH 7 is acidic, which is what we're really focused on brewers. We don't really focus on alkalinity. As far as alkaline, we focus on alkalinity, but that's something different when we're talking about water. Proper pH is important for enzymatic activity. It's important for when the enzymes fold. So when heat is the most important part to activate our amylase enzymes, and that's what I'm going to be talking about is our sacrification enzymes, the beta and alpha amylase. We all know that we get to a certain temperature, and the enzymes become active. They call it folding. It creates an active site of amino acids that basically act like a key to a lock to break our starches down into sugars. The pH, in a proper pH, keeps that active site more steady and a better activity. So it will help with you breaking down your starches to sugars by making sure you have a proper pH. The amylase enzymes actually work best between pH 5.4 and 6. A lot of times we hear the words 5.2 as being the optimal, but they actually do work best between 5.4 and 6. But the pH does affect flavor. Lower pH is going to have more of a bite, just like I'm Italian, like tomato sauce. You want to have it a little bit, you know, a little more bite in your tomato sauce. And a higher pH is going to be a little bit rounder, a bit more mellow. So it depends on your beer style. Beer style definitely is the first thing you want to think about when you're thinking about how you're going to adjust your water. You know, think about food. Sometimes you need acid in the food to bring out some flavor, put a little bit of lemon, and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you want to have it a little less acidic. Generally, and this is very general, Pale beers taste better at the lower end of the mash pH. You can do between 5.2 and 5.4 for your pale beers, for your lagers. Even though the amylase work best between 5.4 and 5.6, 5.2 is a good acidity also, especially if you're trying to have a little bit of a bite in your pale lagers. Darker beers, you don't want so acidic because the dark grains are acidic as it is, so you can mash around 5.4 to 5.6. So these are very general. Even you can go up to about 5.7, 5.8 for those. Remember that pH will drop during the boil and during fermentation as well. Like everything else with beer making, the yeast really call the shots. So we give them the perfect food, we give them the perfect atmosphere, and they're going to do what they want to do. That's just the way they work. We just try to kind of wrangle them. So how do I know what my pH is? Well, if it's very acidic, you put some on your skin. If it burns, you'll know. If it's very alkaline, same thing, put some on your skin, it burns. That's the old school way of doing it. We want to use some sort of meter. There are pH strips that are sold. I sell them, but they are a little difficult. They give very broad ranges. Like, and you have to hold it up to that color thing. And there are some that are better than others. So if you're trying to just test your general pH, they're great. They're less expensive. You get 100 of them in the vial, it's great. But if you're really trying to adjust your pH and stay within a parameter, you're going to need a good quality pH meter. You want to get one that goes to the second decimal point. Remember, pH is logarithmic, meaning that pH 5.3 is 10 times more acidic than 5.4, 100 times more acidic than 5.5. So if I have one that only goes to the 10th decimal point, to the first point, if it says 5.3, I don't know if that's 5.31 or 5.39. So that little bit of accuracy is going to help. So make sure you get one with a little bit more accuracy. It'll make your life better. Write down all your readings. Yeah, I don't know why I have to tell you that. You're homebrewers, you know this. Write everything down. pH readings should always be taken at room temperature. And this is something that I talk to people about a lot. When you take your pH reading, you want to mash for about 10, 20 minutes. You hit your temperature, you're mashing away, you've cracked open the first beer. And then you want to take a sample with as little to no grain in it as possible and bring it down to room temperature, around 70 degrees. The reason why is that when your mash liquid is at mash temperature, it is actually more acidic. It'll be about 0.3 more acidic than it is at room temperature. And all of the literature, all of the calculators are assuming that you're taking this reading at room temperature. And I have people say to me, well, I have a pH meter with ATC that takes care of it, the automatic temperature control. That's not what that's there for. What that's there for is to compensate for errors in the probe when you're taking a warmer temperature, because it'll give an error reading unless it has the ATC, but it'll still give you the reading of the lower pH. The other reason why you don't want to take a warm reading is that by taking a warm reading, you're going to reduce the life of your probe. So taking the cooler reading will be more accurate, will keep the probe lasting a lot longer. Don't get too hung up on the reading. It's really just a guide for you. Let's say you're trying to hit pH 5.4 and you're at 5.43. You know, don't dump the wort. You're fine. Just write it down. See what's happening. Make sure that you clean your pH meter. This is very important. I was talking to the people at Lamont. They actually told me never put it in RO water or distilled water. It actually sucks the salts out of the probe. So make sure you don't do that. What you want to do is clean it with either cleaning solution, or you can clean it with the 4.1 calibration solution that it comes with, and you want to store it wet. So they do have storage solutions, but again, the 4.01 calibration solution does work as a storage. You want to keep it wet so that it stays longer. So just take care of your pH meter, please. And as far as calibration, you do want to calibrate your pH meter. Good pH meters will come with pH calibration solutions, usually 7.01 and 4.01. Calibrate them every once in a while. I'm a little nerdy about it. I calibrate every time because I really like calibrating. It's a kind of cool thing to do. And then I know that it's accurate, but it should be fine. Honestly, you could take the 4.01 and just take a reading of it without calibrating it. If it says 4.01, you're calibrated. So until it's not calibrated, you're you're fine. What's in my water? By the way, that's a sulfate molecule. I had to put that up there. I'm sorry you don't have any funny pictures or memes or anything up there. My girlfriend Carla did this, by the way. Yay, Carla. Anyway, she'll never hear this talk. So what is in my water? Well, in order to know what minerals are in your brewing water, you need to either get a municipal water report, which most municipalities will have online. The problem with getting a municipal water report is that they usually have water testing stations throughout the municipality, and they take all these different readings from everywhere, and then they'll give you the average. So that means that you don't know what's coming out of your tap at that time. It's an average. They're not really making these reports for brewers. They're doing that actually more and more now. In places that have a lot of breweries, they will give the secondary aesthetic report for brewers. But it's still going to be an average. Some municipalities get water from different sources. So the only way to really know what's coming out of your tap is to get a home water kit. And I promise I don't work for Lamont, but Lamont is downstairs, and they have a really good beginner kind of basic water kit that will give you all the parameters you need by testing your water. So you'll have a much more accurate thing. In New York, I do use the municipal report. Again, we have very soft water. It's really just rainwater. So the difference between a couple of points of calcium is not going to mess me up too much. So occasionally we test the water, but it's not very important. But if you do live somewhere that is high mineral and is getting water from different sources, you might want to get one of those. Now, as far as the parameters you are looking for in brewing, they are calcium, magnesium, sodium, sulfate, chloride, alkalinity, and pH. They're usually going to be measured in milligrams per liter or parts per million, except for pH, which is on the pH scale. And the pH of the water doesn't matter that much. It's the pH of the mash that we're interested in. The pH of the water is for the calculators, more for math, to figure out certain things with the math. So we're really interested in calcium, magnesium, sulfate, and chloride, and alkalinity, really. The sodium is, some people will add sodium in their water, but I don't personally. I think that really what you want to know with the sodium is how high it is, if it's too high, and whether you need to dilute your water because of that. But luckily, most people don't have high sodium water, I don't think. So now we know what's in our water. We've taken got our information from either the municipality or we did a test on our own. And so now we're going to adjust the mash pH. Now, the water chemistry affects the mash, but I'm not going to go too deep into chemistry here, but I'm going to give you a little bit of it. So the calcium and magnesium ions that are in your water react with malt phosphates, with phosphorus in the malt, releasing protons, which is acidifying the malt, and it lowers the pH. So the more calcium and to a lesser extent magnesium in your wort, the more protons are released and the more acidic your wort will become. Now, there are bicarbonates that are in the water, which act, they are measured as alkalinity. Sometimes there'll be alkalinity as calcium carbonate, CaCO3, or alkalinity as bicarbonate. And they are what's called a buffer. They keep the pH from changing. The more calcium, to a lesser extent magnesium, is in your water, the more mash will acidify and reduce that alkalinity. I'm going to give you a little Game of Thrones reference in case you're not on this. So alkalinity is a giant ice wall. And magnesium, calcium, and any acid you might add are dragons. So you have this giant ice wall, which means you have a lot of alkalinity, but you only have a couple of dragons. Dragons shoot their fire at the wall. It doesn't come down. The wall's buffering the acid. I'm sure the author of Game of Thrones thought this. What we do is we throw more dragons into the mash. We can throw some calcium, we can throw some acid in there, we get some dragons in there, and we're reducing that alkalinity. Now, the original alkalinity that's reduced by our dragons, before we add anything, is called the residual alkalinity. So that's the alkalinity of the mash that has not been reduced. That is the ice wall after the initial dragons go in there. And this is what we want to reduce. The residual alkalinity will buffer and still keep our mash pH from dropping. And so sometimes people do get a little hung up on reducing their residual alkalinity, but it really is just a number to correlate to MASH pH. The pH is way more important than saying, oh, hey, I hit negative 20 RA, or I'm at 2 RA. It's how it affects your pH, and just keep that in mind when you're using a calculator or something. So as I said, we can reduce that by adding some calcium or magnesium. Personally, I don't use magnesium. Magnesium works half as well as calcium, and there's enough magnesium in our malts in order to be good for yeast health. One thing about magnesium is you use too much of it and it can give sour flavors to your beer. I've never seen a reason. You may use magnesium sulfate, which is Epsom salt. That's fine. But I'm going to talk more about the calcium salts because, again, I'm a New Yorker. We have very low calcium water, and we need to increase calcium in order to adjust our MASH pH. Now, remember something. If you're using calcium sulfate or calcium chloride to reduce your MASH pH, you're also adding sulfate ions and chloride ions, so you're affecting the flavor. And back to my initial talk, my initial story about the Northeast IPA where he was just trying to hit a certain amount of calcium. He wasn't thinking about the amount of ions that he was doing there. So you want to keep all that in play. You could use just acid. If you don't want to add any salts, that's fine. You can use either lactic acid, which is strong, or you could use phosphoric acid, which you'll need to use more of. It's a smaller dragon. Lactic acid has a lower taste threshold. It can be sour, but if you don't have a lot of residual alkalinity to reduce, then lactic acid, you can just use a little bit. In New York, we need to use maybe a milliliter, maybe 2 milliliters in a 5-gallon mash, and the RA just drops right down. You can use acidulated malt. Acidulated malt is one of the German ways to drop your pH. One thing about acidulated malts, it depends on the maltster, right, with everything. Most people use Weyermann. I forgot what the acid content is. That's actually just treated with lactic acid. It works. A lot of times I'll tell people, you know what, throw a half pound of acid malt in there and then check your pH. I'm sure you're fine. You're not going to screw it up. Don't throw 6 pounds of acidulated malt. You're not going to be very happy with that result. You can use salts and acid, which is probably one of the best ways to do it. So you throw some calcium into your mash, get your RA to a point and your sulfate and chloride ions to a point, and then add acid to get it down. This way we're not adding too much salt. And you can always adjust the salt in the boil if you want to. It doesn't hurt to have between 50 parts per million and 150 parts per million of calcium in your finished beer. Calcium is great for yeast health. Yeast need calcium. So if you have low calcium water, if you have soft water, adding some calcium is going to help the yeast flocculate and just give some health. Am I right about that? Okay, thanks. I love having a yeast expert right in front of me. Okay. Also, one thing people do to adjust their alkalinity is boil. You can boil the water and then let it sit. You'll lose about half the alkalinity. The calcium carbonate will precipitate out. You have to do that, let it sit overnight, and then you would decant off of the sediment. This is an old-school way of doing it. I'm not sure. Stan Aronimus told me that he does that. I'm like, okay, I've never done that. I've never really had to do it, but some of you might do that. The other thing you can do is dilute your water with distilled or RO water. So if you have 200 ppm of alkalinity and you add half RO water, you now have 100 parts per million alkalinity. The thing that gets me about that is that if you have a distilled or reverse osmosis water available, why not just start with distilled or reverse osmosis water and you can add salt to it to get to the amount of calcium that you want to reduce your mash. But otherwise, you know, people have all different ways. Your results may vary. All right, so unless you really like doing math, and if you look at how to brew, John gives you a lot of the math. He gives you the grams per gallon of how much ppm of calcium and sulfate and everything you'll get from every salt. So if you like doing that, go to town. But they have these calculators. The internet's there for a reason. And it's good to have a good quality calculator. So it'll give you the guidelines on how much acid, calcium, dilution water you would need to reduce your RA and subsequently your pH. Load your base water's mineral profile into the calculator. I use Bruin water, and I use the pro version, which you give him $5 and he gives you, it's great. And he has all these parameters you put in. You choose your beer style, or in with John Palmer's calculator, which is really great, he has beer styles in there according to BJCP. But in Bruin water, I like it because you can actually put your actual recipe in there. And then you want to adjust your beer, your water for the style. Remember not to adjust for the region. This is something that I see people do a lot of times. They're like, I want to make a beer like Burton, so I'm going to use the water profile of Burton. Or I'm going to make a beer like Dortmund, or I'm going to use the water profile of Dortmund. Or remember, they treated the water before they started using it. They saw that they were having some sort of problem with their mash. They found that they could boil it and reduce the alkalinity. So it's all these calculators are going to go towards the actual style of beer. So just keep that in mind. Again, it's just, sometimes just best to start with RO water. That way you put in zero in your calculator, and then you can build with the salts that you're going to ask. The yield of the mash and the flavor of your beer is what counts. I like to mention not to get too hung up on numbers. I know that's funny because as far as scientists are, they're hung up on numbers. But we're talking about sensory evaluation. We can make another beer. Unless you own a brewery and you're like, well, I had to dump that 30 barrels because of what you said. you know, you're not going to screw your beer up. You can... A lot of times, less is more. You want to do an adjustment, see how it comes out. Your friends are going to love it. You're going to drink it down. It's all fine. But we are all trying to kind of get that perfect beer. But, you know, just keep making beer. That's what I'm going to do. So for measurement, it really helps to have, for acid measurements, it helps have a pipette. That's in milliliters. We use a plastic one, but there's really nice glass ones. I remember always to add... acid to a water, not the other way around. Do what you oughta, add acid to water so it doesn't splash in your face, especially strong acids. And then a good quality scale for salt measurements, one that goes to a tenth of a gram so that you can kind of get that salt measurement in real well. There's one from Anvil that's really good quality. It's cheap. We sell it. Sorry, I'm not supposed to say that. Come visit us. I'll sell you one. So... Yeah, having those tools are important and will help you out. So pH meter, scale, and a pipette, and then some calcium sulfate, which is gypsum, calcium chloride, and if you want, some lactic or phosphoric acid. I mean, that's what I mean by demystifying it. It's not as much as you think. It's just a matter of getting the parameters right. All right, a little bit about dark malts in the mash. We all hear that, you know, in... Dublin, they have high alkalinity water. They threw some dark malts in there, and Guinness was born, which is entirely true, I believe. One thing about dark malts, as the lovabond of the malt increases, they get more acidic. So our base malt is pale malt. Our enzymatic malts are always pale. We're not going to have a really dark malt that's going to be enzymatic. So the dark malts are going to be a much smaller amount of what we add. But the darker the malt, the more it's going to acidify. There's plenty of charts on this on how much. But it's hard to kind of tell because it depends on the maltster. It depends on the batch. But we do know that as the lovabond and subsequently the SRM goes up, the more acidified your mash is going to be. Now, depending on your water, whether you have a lot of alkalinity to buffer that acid, you might have to add buffer. There are other salts that you can add as buffer. The two most popular ones and common ones are baking soda, which, remember, is sodium bicarbonate. So one thing about baking soda, again, you're adding sodium, so you want to be careful using that as a buffer. If you need to buffer a lot, it's not such a great idea. I like to use calcium hydroxide, which is slaked lime. It's extremely basic, so you want to be careful using that. You should wear gloves. You don't need a lot, and boy, does it buffer. So that's good stuff to use if you want to add your dark malts to the mash. An easier way, some people will do, is to just use their pale malts in the mash, even if they're making a dark malt. Adjust your mash to the pH that you want with either salt or acid, usually a little bit higher, around 5-6. Get your conversion, dum-da-dum, I'm done. And then when you do your Forloff step, add your dark malts at that point. You need to add about 10 to 15% more, we found, to get the color and the flavor that you're looking for. But what happens, and the reason why this works, is because you're not dropping your pH during the mash. You will drop your pH a little bit at this point. But you're also not steeping these grains for, an hour and a half or 2 hours, depending on how long your mash, your forloaf, and your sparge is. So you're reducing that. Now, there's another way that people do. They'll just steep the grains separate, like you're doing extract batch, and add it to the boil. Some people do cold steep. There's all different ways to deal with the dark malts. But by adding them just at the forloaf, you are not letting all that astringency get in. You'll get a much smoother flavored beer. Try it. It's just another technique of doing it. I like to use the use the buffering salts personally. I'll throw everything right into the mash and buffer it. And that's because I just want to see if I hit my pH. Like, I'm just like, hey, I'm going to use buffering salts, throw in the grains, and did I do it? Did I get the right amount? It's always kind of like a thing. And if I get it, then I give myself an extra beer for that day. That's how I reward myself, is with beer. So just keep that in mind. All the calculators will say, actually, are you putting the dark malts in the mash or not? It'll give you how much your pH has dropped because you did and whether or not you need to add buffer. So that's basically pH with the mash. Again, it's adjusting the flavor in one way, but it's also adjusting our yield. This has absolutely nothing to do with extract yet. I apologize. We'll get to that. Extract beers are fine. Just so you know, I'm not anti-extract at all, because as long as you ferment them real well and you use fresh extract, you can make kick-ass beers. There's no question about it. All right. So enhancing beer flavor with mineral salt. So let's say you adjusted your mash pH just with acid, and you know what your water profile is, and you want to increase the flavors using the salts. You can do that in the boil. That's one thing you can definitely do. Now, you can do it during the mash. It's a little bit more math. Either way works. But what we're looking at are the ions in calcium right now. So calcium sulfate is gypsum, and calcium chloride is calcium chloride. I don't think there's another name for it. The sulfate in the calcium sulfate is going to increase your hop flavors. They say it gives more hop bite. So hoppier beers do well with a higher ratio of sulfate. I tell, actually, extract brewers a lot in New York that if there's one thing that I can tell you without telling you anything about water, is throw a teaspoon of gypsum into the boil for a hoppy beer. You'll be okay. It's not that strong of a flavor. The chloride and the calcium chloride, as I mentioned before, with the sodium chloride, will enhance malt flavor. So it'll give you maltier, rounder beers. And that's something that I really miss in certain stouts. Like, that's just something you kind of need. You need a little bit of a higher pH and some of that chloride to really bring the beer out. And that's going to go from good to great beer. You should use both salts, depending on the beer style, to enhance the entire beer. It's the ratio that is dependent on the style. You might have heard of the sulfate to chloride ratio. This is a little confusing because some people say the chloride to sulfate ratio, but most of the time you'll see it as the sulfate to chloride ratio. To find out your ratio, simply divide the sulfate by the chloride concentration. That'll give you the your ratio. Ratios below 1 are best for your malty beers. Now, remember one thing about the ratio. It's just a ratio. So, you know, one part of sulfate to 2 parts chloride is not the same as 10 parts sulfate to 20 parts chloride. Same ratio, but you got a lot more sulfate and chloride in there. So when you're going for this ratio, also remember how much salt you're actually adding. A ratio of 1 is what they consider just a balanced beer, just beer, your pale ale sort of thing. And then above 1 are good for hoppy beers. So if you want a nice hoppy classic kind of IPA, you want to have your sulfate. Sometimes it can go up pretty high. There'll be like a ratio of 14, which is pretty high. It's a lot of sulfate, but you'll see that. Now, as far as these Northeast IPAs, a lot of times you see them being actually a 1-to-1 ratio, but high. Like I said, it's not one part per million of each. It will be, you know, 100 parts per million of each. And this is where you can get kind of salty because you have both of them going at the same time. You have a whole ton of calcium. You get this big mouthfeel. You get all this salt. And I've had it definitely overdone. It's definitely given me a lot of electrolytes. I felt better in the morning after drinking them. One thing about calcium chloride, and I guess it's just me, is I find it has a lower taste threshold. It tastes salty pretty quick to me. And that's what happened with that beer that I had. It was a chloride-heavy beer. I could almost smell it. It was fine. I diluted it with some pale ale. It was just fine. I didn't really do that. I just dumped it. Don't ever not dump beer. It's fine. You can add diluted salts post-fermentation. It's something you can do. It takes some calculation to figure out, again, how much you're adding. It's a good idea to dilute your salts and then add it at a ratio. Let's say you do a one-to-one ratio of salt to a certain amount of liquid. You want to heat it up a little bit to help dissolve them and cool them off and then add them to your beer in a ratio and then add it maybe to your keg or post-fermentation. That's asking a lot, but that's only if your beer is kind of like, this really needs something. Try it. It's not a bad idea. You can, if you really want to be obnoxious, go to a bar, order a beer, bring your little salt water with you, put it in there like I did and say, this is so much better than what you had. I'm just kidding. Don't be obnoxious. John Palmer actually told me this one. He said, if you have an IPA and it's tasting kind of dull out of the keg, like for some reason it's not popping, throw in a milliliter of lactic acid. It amazingly works. It just gives that acidic tongue on your on just kind of like, oh, hey, acid, this is good. It just kind of works for a beer that just is not lively. I wouldn't do that for stouts. I would do that for pale ales. All right, here we go. How many extract brewers again? There we go. 2. It's increased since I started. That's awesome. By the end, it'll be like, you know, after all this talk about water salts in my mash, I'll have like 50 of you are like, I'm going back to extract. All right, so with extracts, one thing we don't know is the mineral content in the extract when they actually made the extract. So that's the thing. So the first thing I would do if I was an extract brewer is I would dechlorinate. I can't really stress that enough. If you have highly chlorinated water, dechlorinate it, especially if you're going to top off. We learned that in my store. We made a couple of beers where we just topped off with tap water, and it was like, ooh, that's going in the garbage. So we dechlorinate all our top off water especially. You're better off starting with RO or distilled water, and if you feel your beers need some salt, then you can add salt at the boil, or as I said, post-fermentation if you want to. We use tap water for our extract beers because we are just such soft water. We have rainwater. But if your water, you know, is super minerally or it's softened or something, definitely start with a water source. If you have RO, that's great. A lot of homebrewers have RO systems. One thing about RO water is don't drink it. It will actually leach minerals out of your body. You don't want to drink distilled water either. Just a little safety tip here from Bitter Nesters. I was talking to the guys from Lamotte yesterday about that. I was like, cool. Again, post-fermentation is good. You're still going to need a calculator if you're adding your salts post-fermentation. And write it down. Keep notes. And make good beer. You know, that's what we're here for. All right. In conclusion, water adjustment is an enhancement, not a cure. It's, again, start with good beer and then make great beer. That's what we're doing when we adjust our water. Start with good quality water. Luckily, we have worked that one out as human beings, so that's good. We realize not to drink from the sewage. That's really good. Goodbye, cholera. No, it's great. I mean, it really is. I think about these things because of who I am. Find out what's in your water. Know what minerals are in there. Read your water reports. They're fascinating. Actually, the water report has a lot of stuff that's beyond just the minerals. They'll tell you how they're treating the water and why they're keeping you alive and that you should love them. So definitely, I love water reports for that reason. Take your tests. Make sure you do a pH reading. If you're doing this, get a good pH meter. Take your tests. Keep notes. and just keep brewing beer. The focus obviously should always be on fermentation, on yeast health count, fermentation temperature. We all know that. And one last time, don't drown yourself in all the details. I had to end with something. Thank you. I want to take a picture of all of you. This is pretty awesome. I really appreciate you guys being here. So, in the world of social media, I want you all to say water.
Water!
All right. All right, any questions? They want you to talk into the microphone.
Can you use the mic right here?
Yeah, they're recording this, so they won't. Hi.
Hi.
Is it on? Where's my AV guy? Do you know how, does anyone know how to turn on the microphone?
I'm not AV.
Oh, hello?
Oh, there we go. All right, I was going to come over to you like Jerry Springer.
You said to take the mash pH like after 20 minutes into the mash?
Yeah, generally.
At that point, is it too late to adjust the mash
pH? It kind of is, yeah. At that point, most of the chemical reactions, again, what I was saying is that the pH is a tool, really, at that point. So you try to hit a target. And if you didn't, you're going to be fine. Unless you, like, dumped a cup of acid in there, you should be fine. Right, right. That's why I say write down your all your information. Anyone else?
The
difference between RO and distilled. Distilled is usually steam distilled. So it's actually a distillate of water, and the RO is filtered. They should be pretty close. The one thing about RO is that if your membranes are dirty, then you're going to not get completely clean water, whereas with distilled water, I think that it would always be just pretty pure water. It's good for irons, for steam irons. My mom always had distilled water for the steam irons. Not that that means anything. Yeah, you guys come up to the mic. Shauna,
yeah,
walk around.
I'll go around. And talk to. We're recording this. We want to make sure everyone can hear it.
Thanks. Can you touch on the chloride to sulfite ratio again? Just again.
Well, remember the sulfate is what it is going to affect our hop character, and the chloride is going to affect the malt character. So, as we have a higher sulfate amount to the chloride, we're going to bring out more of the hop flavors. So when they say sulfate to chloride, it's usually below one as far as the ratio. And that just means more sulfate. Again, it's a ratio. It's not actual amounts. The ratio can be the same as you increase the amounts, as long as the ratio stays the same. And then you go higher in the chloride for the darker beers. Again, I find that chloride, just I can taste it. So a super high chloride ratio to me is a bit much. Or I might have gotten that backwards. I apologize. I might have, yeah. You know, like I said, it's sometimes they say chloride to sulfate. I think I did get that backwards as far as the ratios. I apologize. You divide the sulfate by the chloride. So, yeah, below one is best for malty beers. Above one is best for hoppy beers. So, if anyone's listening to this on the internet right now, please understand that I just made a mistake. I am a human. Yes, Tom.
Yes, I was expecting sort of a dry talk, but I think you forgot.
Thank you.
For those of us who are extract brewers who wouldn't admit it in public, so I'm assuming you said that the water that they make the extract with, of course, is important since the minerals are not volatile. I'm assuming the same applies to both dry extract and liquid extract.
Yeah. As far as I know, you know, this is just what you read. It's as far as I know, it's just that use the cleanest slate and then see how the beer comes out sort of thing. Most of the beers come out just fine without messing with the water too much. But that's why I tell people, you know, throw some gypsum in there if you really want to accentuate the hops. It's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Okay.
How are you, Jeffrey?
I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for your talk.
I'm going to get drunk soon.
I'll make it short. So regarding dechlorination.
Yeah.
So for a couple of years now, following some discussion on a forum, I've been using vitamin C to dechlorinate.
Ascorbic acid?
Yeah, or vitamin C. Not a C.
Oh, not a sort, just actual vitamin C. It could be from any source.
So
never heard of that.
Okay.
I learned so much from you guys.
So, yeah, as opposed to, you know, thiosulfate or anything like that to drop the chlorine level down. So it my beer tastes better, but I don't know if it's really from dechlorination, although it seems like after I let my water sit for a couple hours with it in there, I don't smell the chlorine so much, and I thought this might help with the chlorine.
You're acidifying the water,
that's
certainly.
That's the other thing I wonder, I wonder if that's...
It depends on how much you're putting in. I would have to go back to my Airbnb and look that up. But thank you. No, I'm going to look into that. It's I learn something every day, every day. So that's pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Much.
Thank you, sir. Vince.
Good morning.
My dad's name.
There's a product called, I think it's pH 5.2.
Mm-hmm.
Put a tablespoon in. How does that work, and how does it know what your original pH is to make it better?
You know, that's a little bit of a controversial thing. That's from Five Star, who I love, so I don't want to say anything really about it. But it's apparently it's just phosphorus. I'd have to look it up again, but it will work on higher alkaline water. It doesn't really work on lower alkaline water. There's no way to dial in to 5.2 with just one pitch of something. And even 5.2 is fairly acidic. So it depends on the beer you're making. I've used it. I don't know if it made much of a difference, but I prefer to adjust my mineral salts to, to my what I'm trying to hit, like a cook. It would be like a cook having this is the spice that's in everything, and you just throw it in there. It's there's look it up. There's some controversy on it. You look it up on Bruin Guard's on Bruin Water's site. He has a little thing about it in there.
Okay,
again, you know,
you.
Gotta keep it. I'm a owner. Got to keep it cool. What's up, John?
Hello. Just a quick question. Have you ever looked at the effects of potassium as another salt?
Good question. No. Sorry. You know, all the literature is calcium, magnesium, sodium. You know, Palmer says it. I believe it. That settles it. That's like my life. So. Bruin Water is what it is. It's B-R-U-N water. Yeah. It's got that slashy thing. It's best to Google search it, Bruin Water, and it's fantastic. It's like a really good resource. So, what's up, Tom?
Good morning. What do you look for in a good pH meter?
I look for a meter that goes to the second decimal to a hundredth. Something that's built real well. Like there are certain ones that are good. What do we sell? I don't remember. We get it from Brewmaster, so it's what happened with the checker is that they went to just to the first decimal point. So we started getting one from Brewmaster. These are cheap. A good pH meter can go into hundreds and hundreds of dollars. These are just the little handhelds, cost about $70. I'm looking for that. I'm looking for cheap.
Price point's important.
Are you with Five Star?
No.
Okay.
I walked through their booth and handed it to them.
Yeah, they've changed the game personally for me. The Star Sand, like when I first started brewing, it was bleach.
Yeah.
You know, and bleach just is the worst.
Star
Sand is a wonderful product. I'd like to say that officially, Five Star, Star Sand and PBW are wonderful products. Right. Some of them come with, I think it's an alkaline solution around 10, which I never calibrate for. So I'm always looking for a 7. It's 7.01 and a 4.01 calibration. That's what I do. I'd like something that's a little bit hardy. We've only dealt with two. The one was the checker. I forgot who the Hannah Instruments. it's a good. It was a really good quality, and they're known for their pH meters, so they do have higher end ones. And then I wish I could remember the other one. I knew I was going to get hit with something that I didn't know about my own store. Go to my website. He's looking it up right now. Does it say? But yeah, I'm looking for something that's a fairly good price point. That's going to go within the hundreds.
Okay.
So,
well, thank you.
Thank you. Adjust your water.
Any other questions?
You guys are awesome. Thank you very much. It was a lot of fun. Let's drink some beer.